I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, I'm Claire Mutimer.
And I'm Susie Coulson. Welcome to The Backstory. In each episode, we'll be hearing about an experience that has happened to someone that shaped who they are.
30 minutes that remind us that everyone's dealing with something. So we're a documentary podcast. A docupod.
Except you made that word up.
Welcome back after our short break. It's proper autumn now.
I know, it is. We've been having a fun game of Conkers this morning.
Exactly, that's basically our morning, you know, just knocking Conkers against each other.
Sounds so wrong. Fires on, slippers on, it's all good to go.
So now we've painted that glorious picture for you, I'm going to introduce our latest backstory. This week we're hearing from Lillian. Lillian's in her early 70s and her husband Dan is in his 90s. Lillian and Dan have had a great life, lots of dancing from what I understand, travelling and fun. In recent years, however, Lillian's been caring for Dan as he's become increasingly frail. Just a few weeks ago, they made the difficult decision that Dan needed to move into full-time residential care. A massive change for them both, and one which relieves Lillian of the responsibilities that came with being a carer, but leaves her at home by herself. Susie went to meet with Lillian, and this is her story.
All right, Lillian, if you cast your mind back over your life, think of an experience that you've had that you'd like to tell me about.
It was caring for my husband and then letting him go into a home and not being his carer anymore.
Yeah, it's all right. It's all right, Lillian.
Dan and I had a nice life. Dan was a very strong character and we ran a hotel in Torquay. We had lovely holidays. He was a painter and decorator, and he did lots of jobs in the house. He made our houses lovely. And then at the age of 79 or so, we decided we'd go and live in France.
Wow.
We had a lovely life in France for 10 years. And then he got poorly and we came back to England and moved to Norfolk. And then he just seemed to get old. The caring for him became difficult. While he was getting older, so was I. And I didn't have the strength then to lift him up or if he fell over or...
It's really upsetting.
Oh, it's only recent. He went into the home about 7 weeks ago. It's very sad when you... I've been married a long time.
Yeah.
And then you stop being a wife and you become a carer. And it is sad because you lose your friend.
Let's find you a tissue. Let me grab you a tissue.
When you become a carer, you're doing things for your husband that you would never dream in your wildest dreams when you first married that you would be doing for this man who you'd loved and being lovers with. And it's just so very sad and humiliating for them. And then come the point where he had to go into care because I couldn't manage him anymore. And So we made the decision, the two of us. He agreed, he was sad about it, but he agreed that he would go into care. That's when the guilt comes in. I defy anyone, man or woman, who puts their partner into care to say that guilt does not come into it, because it does. Because you feel that you've failed your partner. Maybe they feel you don't care anymore, but you do. You care so much that you have to do what's best for you and them. And I felt that the care home was best for Dan and me. And he seems to have settled in. I go and see him quite often. Maybe too often.
How often do you go?
Sometimes I go 4 times a week, and it's silly. Because sometimes I feel that he doesn't want me to go. You know, we seem to have settled into a routine that he just sits and watches the television. And he seems to have gone very old. Old.
Do you feel like he's changed since he went in?
He has. He's not as bright in his mind. Because he used to love the politics programmes on the television. Now he doesn't even know how to turn the television over or on. And if the staff don't realise, he just sits and watches an empty television.
You felt guilty when he moved into the
home. Oh, yes. I felt as if I'd failed. But I realised that it's not so much about whether you've failed. You have to think about yourself too. I was trapped in this house because you know, was on tenterhooks, wondering whether he could fall or did he need something. You get up of a morning, you think, oh God, I wish I could go out. Especially when it's winter and, you know, you're in this house and you just chat. Well, you didn't chat because Dan couldn't instigate a conversation unless he needed something, like he needed the toilet or he needed the television turning over, or that was his conversation. But as someone once said to me, that's the downside of marrying a man who's so much older than you.
Mm.
But Dan never seemed old when we met. He was full of life and he was just my dad. I used to be a sole carer.
Wow.
I would lift him if he fell over. Luckily, I had a nice friend, have a nice friend next door who would come in and help me. I damaged my shoulder lifting him. And that's really was the start of me not being able to care for him properly. The doctor we have, Dr. Smith, he suggested we get carers. When the carers started coming, because they're not allowed to lift, they gave me equipment to help, and that's how it's been for the last 12 months until August, and it just got too much. Dan was asleep half the day but awake in the night, and he would keep me awake and I was very tired, and you get weary.
Mm.
One of the doctors said, I think really is the time, Mr. Hurley, when you should think about going into care. He said, no, at the beginning. But, you know, she was chatting to him, and then I said, well, Dan, I'm very tired, and it's okay you saying no, but there has to come a time. So he agreed. I went to see the home with my stepdaughter, and we decided that was nice. It's a bright, airy home. It's got a good CQC report, which is the one thing I researched.
Yeah.
Dan moved in within a week.
Tell me about that day when he moved in.
Oh, don't. That day when he moved in. I was quite good, actually. I thought I'd be very, very upset. Two of my stepsons come down from London and helped me. I packed his things and I was quite strong that day. It was when I got home. House was quiet, and it hadn't been quiet for a long time because Dan was a bit deaf and the telly would blare away, and it's the quiet that's the worst. But I'm getting used to it now, and I do have lovely family. then I have a lovely friends and I'm not lonely. I'm a bit lonesome sometimes because I was married to Dan for 31 years. After spending a lifetime with someone, you do miss them.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've had a cracking life at times. We've laughed a lot, we've cried a lot, and I've cursed him a lot. But he was still my friend. And you do miss that.
Yeah.
But I'm getting over it now. I go up to see him. And we have the odd giggle. But he's slipping away. He does know me most of the time. And he says, "You're Lillian, my wife." Which makes me laugh.
You said earlier that you don't feel like a wife anymore.
No, you're not really. You're a carer. I love Dan. I've always loved Dan. But I care about him and you're a carer. Because when you're a wife, you there's affection. And I think when you become someone's carer, that affection, although you have it and you give it, when they are incapable of giving it back, it's very hurtful. You know they can't help it, but you do miss it. A few weeks before Dan went into home, one of the carers was taking him to bed and he was walking across the lounge and he said, "Good night, sweetie." And it was lovely to hear him say that to me because he hadn't said anything like that for an awful long time. A little bit of your hubby coming back.
A glimpse of something. A little glimpse of
what we used to have.
Yeah. It's almost like a bereavement, isn't it?
It is. It is. It is, in a way, a kind of bereavement. He asked me the other day, when was he going to be 50? I said, "Oh, sweetheart, don't I wish?" Yeah, he didn't realise. I said to him, "You're 94, nearly 95. And he said, "My God, when did that happen?" We could still have the odd little joke. Dan used to be a ballroom dancer. I have lots of pictures of him dancing with different women. I think he was a bit of a Romeo in his time. That's what young people, when they see old people, they forget that old people were young people once. And when I was a carer in homes and young ones that come in, and I'd say, "Please, please remember that these people were your age once. They've had lives. They've done things maybe you wouldn't dream of. They've toured the world and had lovers and marriages and children and lived lives that you could only dream of, some of these people." Dan had a cracking life going round dancing.
And you travelled together?
Oh yeah, we had many holidays. We went to Italy for my son's wedding. We looked a right pair of toffs for that wedding. We really did.
Why?
I had a lilac dress on, big, big lilac hat. And Dan had a grey suit on and with a lilac tie and a white shirt and a lilac shirt. And tie, and he had this like trilby on. And we came out of the hotel waiting for our taxi. All the people from the hotel next door to us and the owners of our apartments came out, and they all clapped when they saw me and Dan, and they were saying, "Bella, Bella." They thought we looked wonderful, and we did. We really did look the business. Yeah. Nice. I may have walked a bit like Dick Emery in my stiletto heels, but if I was standing still, it was all right. He settled down. I think as time goes on, he'll be fine.
And what about you as time goes on?
Well, as time goes on, I just potter around my flat and cuddle up to my little cat, Monty, and my daughter, my son, and I've got a little granddaughter.
Okay.
And they will come down, and when they come down now, I can go out with them.
Right.
And go out for dinner or go out for lunch, which I couldn't do before because of Dan. And or if I did, I'd have to come back quick.
And you were always worrying.
Yes,
if you
are. in a way, it is better for both of us. We've both gained. Dan's got the care he needs. In the care home, he's got 24-hour care. I gain by being able to go out and about a bit more free.
Yeah.
And I think really you need that. You need your own time, your own space. While it's sad that you make the decision for your partner to go into care, sometimes it can bring you together more. You have you're freer and you can chat and know that there's no resentment anymore.
Right.
Because you can become resentful of them.
Yeah.
You try your best not to, but sometimes you just say, oh, God, I wish I could go out. And,
yeah.
You know, I don't care who you are. I don't care how angelic you are. There is a little bit of that when you're caring for someone 24/7 and you haven't got the freedom to come and go as you please. Saying that, it's still new to me, that concept, and I'm finding it a bit difficult to get myself motivated to go out. But it'll come. It'll work its way out, and I think I'll be okay.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Isn't it noticeable how residential care is generally felt as a failure?
Yeah, it's always spoken of as a negative, isn't it? I don't know why that is.
Yeah, I mean, I think we do know why that is, don't we? But it's kind of how you change that, or I suppose, you know, we just have high expectations of ourselves, don't we? That we can look after people into their old age and, like, we can sort of cope with that.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's, there are different levels of old age, aren't there? You know, there's old age like it used to be when you retired at 65 and then, you know, a few more years and off you popped. And then there's very old age, and that can go on for, people can be old for a couple of decades, can't they?
Yeah. And I suppose there's that kind of couple of decades between Lillian and Dan, aren't there, kind of thing. And that is the difference between sort of being the carer and being the cared for.
And it's not just with older people, is it? I mean, it can, you know, I think we have this hesitation around residential care for people with disabilities and, you know, in other situations.
I was literally talking to somebody last week who's in their 20s, and he was telling, and I knew his brother had autism, and and so I said to him, oh, how's your brother? And he sort of said, you know, he kind of went, oh, well, he's in care. And then he sort of said, I always feel so bad saying that, you know. And I was like, oh gosh, you know, how old is he? And he was like, well, he's 19. I said, well, you know, it's completely normal, isn't it, that a 19-year-old should go on to somewhere else, you know, like find a different life,
as a sort of move into independence.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that would happen, you know, if he was going to university, or if he was moving on to do work, or and so actually it's a really natural time to break and go and live in a residential care home if that's the right thing for you, kind of thing.
I think there are some amazing homes out there, aren't there? And I guess the challenge is to make residential homes a positive choice in some cases, but
yeah, definitely,
you know, funding being what it is, I think it's pretty hard to do that. The other part of Lillian's story that really struck me was around loneliness, and there's been so much about this recently, hasn't there? So much in the news, which is a really good thing, but her situation is one of those that it kind of wasn't on my radar. It's not something that you think about, that
notion. It was interesting, wasn't it? Lillian's still married, her husband's still alive, and she sees him. But everything has changed.
Yeah, completely. And as she said, you know, it's a form of bereavement, you know, even though the person is still alive.
Yeah,
it's
kind of like that
there.
First level of losing someone, isn't it? Like, it's a massive loss. And there's so much going on there, because on the one hand, they couldn't have carried on as they were.
Yeah, definitely not.
Lillian was tied to the house. She couldn't go out. But Dan had become less able to have a relationship with her. His conversation had dwindled, like, can
yeah,
you
kind of an expression.
Get me
yeah,
a tea?
Exactly, a... yeah. And also, you know, even though Lillian is younger than Dan, she's still in her 70s, and just the physical strain of caring for him, just having to lift someone and all that comes with that. I know that they did end up having carers coming in, but I think still, you know, she was doing an awful lot. So
yeah, so you can see that there was a real need for Dan to go into care, but then Lillian's left with the loss, the quietness of the house, and just being in a house alone.
Yeah, completely. So, you know, just going with that loneliness theme and going off at a bit of a tangent, what do you think, you know, if you had to say what loneliness is, what would you say?
I think it's about connection, feeling something genuine with someone, isn't it? Because yeah. you can be lonely even when you're surrounded by people, and you know how people always say, like, London is one of the most lonely places.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and I guess then there's also the loneliness of living alone, and you know that it's very well known that I think like 500,000 people in the UK are living alone and don't see anybody all week, you know, for weeks at a time, so, or for a week at a time. Yeah. I don't actually know what the period of time is, but anyway, it's a while. It's quite a long time. Okay. It's too long.
You know, when people talk about like the village shop and the post office and how important it is, and it wasn't until I lived where I live and saw that in action that I could see actually what a vital role it plays in people's lives. You know, just that opportunity to go in and see somebody that knows your name and knows a little bit
so
about
true.
You and
yeah.
will notice if you haven't popped in for a few days. And
moving out to the middle of nowhere in Norfolk and having small children, and then it's just sort of like, well, where am I going to walk to? You
yes.
know, should I walk to that hedge or should I walk to that tree? Like, should I walk to that field or should I walk to the village shop, which I did do a few times, but is about 3.5 miles away
yeah,
down some pretty dangerous roads. So it is, yeah, it's funny. It's kind of like finding a reason to just go and pop to a village
yeah.
shop. I can really see that now, and the chat that you get
yeah.
from doing that is so important.
Yeah, I have my little people on my morning drive, you know, where we have a little wave, just those little familiar people each time. Don't know them.
No.
Don't know them from
Adam. Do you see the two like people in reflective outfits like cycling together, husband and wife?
No, not seen them. There's an electrician in his van. I always give him a bit of a,
ooh,
yeah, a bit
give
of a wave.
A wave, right.
Yeah.
So what should we do? Last Christmas we had tips for making small talk at Christmas parties.
Yeah, we did.
Perhaps
yeah.
now we need some tips for combating loneliness.
Okay, come on then.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's nothing like a bit of a off the cuff advice for a couple of women living in a field.
Well,
or
I know, never mind all the commissions and everyone that's done lots of serious work on this. I think, you know, just a couple of glib suggestions from us and, you know,
yeah.
job done. Yeah. We'll sort it out in one fell swoop. But you know, in all seriousness.
Oh, she's getting serious.
We will. There
We're
is
not joking around.
There
too much.
Is good information out there from people who have put some proper
but essentially,
thought into that.
It's about getting out of your house and meeting other people.
Well, you know,
or
if
getting
you
some
can,
people to come round to you. I know it's easier said than done for a lot of
it's
people.
It's just some. It's whatever it is to make a genuine contact, isn't it? Just to have something that's real life and that connects you to other people. So there is good information out there, and we will put it in the show notes, because you know loneliness is a biggie and it's an issue for so many people.
I've got some information here that it's not just old people.
Okay, go on then.
Well, people in their 20s, they recently found that they were the most lonely. There's plenty of evidence apparently suggests that collectively the millennials are in the throes of an unspoken epidemic of loneliness, because social media is keeping them from connecting with other people in real life.
Okay, yeah.
It's old ground, but social media also leads them to suffer from the comparison curse, the belief,
yes.
because, you know, it's all presented online. It looks like everyone's having an amazing time. There's nothing
yeah.
sadder than sitting in your lonely living room with your laptop on your lap and a ready meal, like, you know, sliding off your plate and looking at like everybody jumping around at a party having an amazing time. I think that's, you know.
You paint a cheery picture there.
That was me in my 20s. That just threw back to you there.
I know that another time of loneliness is when you're a new parent, you know, having quite a busy life and working full time, and then suddenly having a baby and being
yeah.
completely.
I remember my friend saying
stuck.
To me, you just got to get out every day.
Absolutely.
You've got to get out.
Absolutely.
Whatever it takes.
Yeah.
Whether they've got a dirty nappy or whatever
yeah.
it is, going to a crappy...
freezing cold, dirty village hall.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's better than being at home.
Going to a music session where you know but nobody.
Yeah.
Like going to walk to the village shop.
Yeah. Or the hedge.
Yeah. Or the tree in back again. It's worth it. I was reading about the Loneliness Project, which is a cool, I don't know, would you call it postmodern kind of social media experiment, in that it's kind of, Facebook is all about, you know, all the wonderful things we're doing. Instagram is like a happiness beauty project. And this project about loneliness is perhaps a very honest project. It's where people can just like write about why they're feeling lonely. One of the examples is, I spent 2 hours alone wandering around an IKEA because I was too nervous to ask people to come with me. I ate 2 hot dogs and brought nothing. And it's just that kind of like, this is the stark reality. And, you know, I mean, I don't know whether it helps. I think it's just that feeling of like, oh, there are other people out there that are feeling like this. And it's not just a pretty picture on Instagram. It's like a real statement of how they're feeling, kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah, I think there's like 1,400 stories or something on there already. So we'll put that on the show notes in case anybody's interested in having a look at the Loneliness Project.
Yeah, sounds good. Okay, let's move on to our podcast recommendation. Claire, I know you've been listening to a backstory favourite, which is the new season of the wonderful, absolutely brilliant Esther Perel. Where should we begin? What's it like? What's this new season like?
Oh, it's just fabulous again, of course, because it's Esther. And I just, honestly, I'm starting to kind of have this sort of guru level. she's just like on this pedestal.
And she is, completely.
Like, I just can't believe the insight that she manages to draw out of these things. And whatever she says, I don't know whether she's put them under some kind of spell, but like she says these things and then they're like, that's exactly how I feel. Like,
do you think she'd be really annoying to be married to? Do you think when you were, you know, in the throes of an argument, she'd just be very kind of, you know, like, good humoured and insightful, and you'd be like, for God's sake, just take like, the damn bins
out, woman.
I know
the thing about your childhood is obviously hurting you, but yeah, exactly. But the rubbish still needs to go out. Like, no, I think they've found some very interesting stories. They've obviously got a huge pool of people who are just desperate to get on the show now.
Really?
So they can just like pick and choose, you know, from probably millions of applicants like, who are kind of writing in going, please, can you help me with this shit relationship? Yeah. I mean, you've written in, haven't you? No, I'm joking. We've been writing to her. We don't even want to talk about our relationships. We just want to have like coffee with her and hang out and have supper. And like, you know, she's like literally on my like list of like ultimate supper guests.
Okay.
And
who else is on the list?
Oh God, I don't know. I have to think about it really carefully and like sort of collate it for ages. But that one is just like, you know,
she's a given.
Yeah, she's a given. Oh my God. Anyway, you have to listen to it. It's incredible.
Brilliant. I will do. Thank you. Can I also say a quick thanks to Pietro, who got in contact with us a while ago from Lisbon. He recommended In the Dark, if you remember, which we mentioned before. And I think we were maybe a little bit dismissive of it, thinking that it was true crime. But actually, I've listened to both seasons and it's more kind of investigative journalism. And I really enjoyed it, actually. New recommendations are always welcome. Love getting recommendations.
Yeah, we love a podcast recommendation. So, yeah, recommend us and recommend somebody else to us.
Absolutely.
Okay?
Yes. Yeah, that sounds good.
Right. Anything else we need to sort out?
We could do that podcast thing where we talk about reviews. Everybody else does it. So if you would like to support the backstory, then a review really does help. It sounds like such a small thing, but we'd be very, very grateful.
Susie
so.
Puts on her special voice when she's talking about reviews. We'd be
very,
we noticed that.
Very. I'm holding my hands together in a begging motion.
Just
lies
on the floor and sort of just like grovels. And also make sure that you're subscribed so that you get all our new episodes for free, and sign up a friend if you can.
Yeah, do. Just seriously, just grab their phone and subscribe them.
Yeah, we've been
doing
that quite a lot recently.
We've just got the one caution for it.
And we've also got some stuff to give away, some old clothes of Susie. No. Susie's been shopping. So as we hurtle towards Christmas, keep your eyes open. It won't be a competition because there are all sorts of rules around competitions that we can't be bothered to read about.
Just really can't be bothered.
So we'll find a more random way of allocating stuff.
Oh, that sounds good. And what is this stuff that you're alluding to?
Oh, well, you have to wait and see.
Okay. All right. Yeah. That's tantalizing. I mean, talk about leaving us on a cliff edge. Okay, that is definitely it for this week. Thank you so much for listening and thanks for your support. We'll be back with a brand new backstory next week. See you then.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We are the Backstory Podcast on Facebook and Instagram, at the Backstory Pod on Twitter. Search for the Backstory with Claire and Susie in your podcast directory.
For sponsorship opportunities, or if you'd like to take part in a show, please contact hello@thebackstorypodcast.co.uk. The Backstory Podcast is produced by Tin Shed Productions.